Welcome to the Minimum Viable Podcast, a project of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Our mission is to inspire, connect, and empower people in order to promote a culture of innovation in the U.S. national security community. You can learn more about DEF and get involved at DEF.org. That's DEF.org. We look forward to your ideas and are excited to connect you with other doers working on hard problems.
All right, welcome to another weekly wrap-up episode on this fine Wednesday, the 9th of September. Mike Pakoda and Mike Madrid here as your hosts, and we're here to deliver you a wrap-up of what's going on around DEF over the past week.
In this segment, we're going to cover things that are happening all over the DEF community from all the different ways members are interacting with each other. In this space, we found that we jump from Slack to online forums to different social media platforms. And really, this is just a quick, easy way for everybody in the DEF community to catch a few minutes, see what's going on in the larger community, and hopefully gain some interest into other perspectives that you might not have participated with, and really open some insight into all the facets that make up DEF. And with that, Mike, why don't you start us off with the new members?
All right, as we do, we welcome people who joined in the past week since our last episode. And uniquely this week, I did not get a chance to prepare for the pronunciation gauntlet. So I'm going to do it live. Here we go. But a big warm welcome to Manita Alcantara, Greg Grabner, Mark Brookhuizen, Joel Burke, Stephen Taylor, Keegan Evans, Victoria Kinsler, Amy Molina, Charlie Fisher, Eric Evans, Elizabeth Stevens, Caleb Singer, Paul Quashnak, Adam Welch, and Jonathan Streetman. Some names familiar, many not yet familiar, but I look forward to meeting and interacting with these folks who are joining from all over the country. And as always, please forgive any mispronunciations. But it's exciting to see new members coming in and extend them a warm personal welcome. We also always spotlight a volunteer on the show. And this week, I'd like to talk about Avi Jacobson. So Avi's from Chevy Chase, Maryland. He graduated from the University of Michigan and also holds a degree from the Naval Postgraduate School and his JD from Case Western. He served in the Air Force and the Air National Guard as an operational meteorologist, and since then has worked in a whole variety of roles for a variety of companies. For the past 4 years, he's been working as a senior investment officer and then investment director at Sunfunder based in Israel, where he develops and sustains lending relationships with leading renewable energy providers. And they specifically serve customers with limited or no access to functioning electrical grids. So I know he's done a lot of work for customers and companies based in Africa. He's also a defense council member with the Truman National Security Project. He has four kids, two bearded dragons, as he describes them, and a puppy. His family lives there in Israel. For fun facts, he's been to every state in America but North Dakota and Arkansas. And starting with Hurricane Katrina, which destroyed the weather schoolhouse the day he was supposed to report, apparently he's never actually been formally trained for any of his jobs. And I can say that he probably was not formally trained for his volunteer job with DEF either. So he's wondering if someday someone will notice, but with DEF, he volunteers as the lead for our Firestarter Fellowship Program, providing a unique experience for four fellows over the course of a year. Our current fellows were announced at DEF 2019, and we'll be outbriefing their projects at DEF 2020 here next month. And Avi and the team he's been building to support this fellowship program, they are always seeking ways to empower and equip these fellows. So I'm really thankful for his leadership and his volunteering. We are always recruiting for passionate people who would like to volunteer. So if you're interested in stepping up, then head over to def.org/join. Mike, before I hand it over to you for some news from around DEF, you were on vacation last week. I had a guest co-host, which was awesome, the inimitable Jesse Levin. But how was your vacation? And then take us into some news from around DEF.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Mike. I'm glad to know that we stayed strong and powered through a quick transition. And thank you, Jesse, for filling in. Vacation was great. We went down to Florida, visited some family. We're up here in Maryland, so that was quite a drive with a four-year-old. But I will say the state of COVID going to amusement parks is wonderful. I actually felt quite safe compared to going to Lowe's or gas stations. It was great. Appreciate you asking, Mike. It's good to be back. And we'll transition into news from around DEF. So out in DC, they held what looked like a great happy hour last Friday, featuring the design thinking folks and with a new cognitive illusion lesson. It looked like it had great feedback. It was really glad to see those people getting out there. And I think DC's been pretty good about every Friday holding a drinking thing. So if anybody isn't doing anything, don't forget you don't have to be in DC. Great thing about going virtual. Out in acquisitions, the Firestarter Fellowship Program, which you were talking about earlier, they're seeking people from military acquisition experience backgrounds to serve as mentors and panelists for the upcoming events they have going on. So hop in, out into the acquisition channel. Out in Collab and Tools, it looks like Microsoft is going to be rolling out a new way of doing Outlook Spaces called Project Mocha. So I think that although it doesn't have a lot of application inside the DoD for what was joking 5, 10, 15, 20 years, for everybody else, it's a new face, and let's see how that goes. Out in Culture and Change, there was a really nice quote that I enjoyed, and it was, innovation is like a diet. It doesn't really matter or last until it transitions into organizational lifestyle. I think that has a great ring for most of the people here. Always happy to spotlight little quotes like that. Out in DEF 2020, Mike, I think you're going to touch on this later, but registration has opened. So I'm glad I could beat you to that hook. Out in the events channel, DAU, once again, is calling out for any federal employees, and I believe it will also extend it out to government contractors for the TED DAUX event, talking about the art of the impossible, happening on September 23rd. And the same channel, NASA is hosting an assembly and manufacturing technologies workshop, as well as there's a Code for America group that's putting on the 8th annual National Day of Civic Hacking. I would really like to see what comes out of that. Out on the jobs channel, as always, there is a ton of applications that fellow DEF members have put out there for opportunities. There's positions for engineers, project managers, program managers, analysts, just anything you could think of. So if you know anybody impacted by COVID, it's a great opportunity to connect them with DEF and get them into that channel. Out in the Propel Her channel, I mean, there's a great news story that Mike and I were talking about. And, you know, there's just a ton of stuff going on around the world. And out in our Australia section of DEF has some new things. And like Mike was talking about earlier, this is it's a worldwide group. We talked about our DEF spotlight was in Israel, and now we've got some good stuff going on in Australia. So it's really nice to see that there's events happening worldwide inside of this community. Out in opportunities or help, AFWERX just launched a bunch of new challenges related to energy. So those are always great opportunities. I myself am participating in one right now, not related to energy. Maybe AM if you're looking by the background. But those are a great group of people, so try to get involved if you can. Finally, we're going to put a link out in the show notes. This is going to be talking about the Public Spend Forum. There's particularly a survey. It should only take about 5 minutes for people to do. And really what it's going to highlight is for people to come in and say, what barriers do they see or think exist with working with the government? So this is going to be a great opportunity to give your input. If anybody has anything that they think would contribute, jump in, take the survey. This is really going to help a lot of people and hopefully correct some problems or disinformation that may exist. And then with that, we're going to transition into the channel of the week. This is an area that was really thought up by Madrid. And I loved it because when we first started putting this together, I was unaware of so many channels, so many conversations that were happening. And I've been participating with DEF for about 5 years. So this week, I really want to talk about the Culture and Change channel. Although there is no channel topic, and Mike, we probably need to fix that and get something, a blurb in there for the slackers. Really, I've been following this channel for a while, and the channel topic is really along the gist of having discussions pertaining to the difficulties surrounding changes to established cultures, not just in the DoD, but in the commercial sector. A lot of good information there. That's one of the, you know, big things that we battle inside the DoD is culture change, and a lot of solutions have come through DEF, so that's a great channel for people to have those conversations. So Mike, I think I'm done talking. It's off to you to talk about other DEF events.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you highlighting different things that have been going on, different discussions, and different new initiatives. I'll speak to a couple things from the organizational side. As always, there's a slew of DEF events that I get to talk about, both past and upcoming. In the past week, we had a virtual Q&A with James Urquhart about Wardley mapping. That was last night, and it was centered on, you know, educating leaders in technology across the DoD and national security community about frameworks and strategies to run digital transformation efforts. So I didn't know a lot about that before. I'm really grateful we could put that event together. And if you missed it, you can listen to those insights later on the DEF podcast when we post the recording. As far as upcoming events, it's a busy week and a busy month. If you're listening to this in time, on Thursday night, the 10th, two of our Agoras are getting together, one in Charlottesville, which is having a workshop led by DEF partner organization Human Intelligence and Dan Manning that's focused on cultivating creativity. And a couple hours later, because of the time zone difference, our San Diego Agora is getting together for another virtual drink and think as a social to meet and reconnect out there in Southern California. We have two Cornerstones events coming up on the calendar. Again, if you're not familiar yet, Cornerstones is a member-led project to deliver impactful trainings for startups and emerging companies, specifically for entrepreneurs. Past trainings have included communications, marketing, and accounting strategies. Next up are financial models on September 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern, and pricing as it relates to your products and services on September 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Both are virtual via Zoom. Our member and volunteer Jed, who is leading the Cornerstones project, is out there recruiting experts and really qualified speakers for these tactical concepts. So I encourage anyone to join these sessions or listen to the recordings afterwards so that they can learn from these lessons and hear from these experts. Another project that's ongoing is the XWork project. We've talked about that on the show many times before. It's an ongoing effort to deliver something tangible on the future of work and how the national security workforce can best continue in this new normal with the capabilities, competencies, and culture, that's our three C's, to work collaboratively and in many cases remotely. We've been tackling that project as a coalition with several other mission-driven organizations alongside DEF. And this next workshop is hosted by one of those coalition members, the Boone Group. It'll be on September 15th. That's a Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Expect it to be interactive. If you've been to any of these previous workshops, you'll know they're hands-on with facilitators, design thinking methodology, virtual whiteboards, virtual stickies galore. So I'm really excited for the momentum that project is continuing with and the focus on delivering a tangible product later this fall. And finally, Mike, you stole a little bit of thunder, but that's A-okay. DEF 2020 tickets are now available. It's been a long road coming. They actually, the team was working hard and put them out on Labor Day. So that Eventbrite is live. You can find links to DEF 2020 and to all of our upcoming events on the DEF.org website. And we're looking forward to our distributed conference one day this year instead of three. And it will be on the 23rd of October. Sadly, we won't all get to travel to Indiana and experience the Midwestern hospitality, but I'm grateful for Heath Murray and the whole crew who have been working diligently to put together a great interactive event. With that, I am excited to segue to the second half of our weekly wrap-up, where we get to interview a special guest. I'll introduce him, and Mike, you get to do the questions, but we have on the show Josh Marcuse, the inimitable, everyone knows him, synonymous with defense innovation. He's on here as a DEF Board of Directors member, but also just as a longtime DEF member and supporter. And many of us know him also as the previous executive director of the Defense Innovation Board. So Mike, I'll hand it over to you. Josh, thanks for being on the show.
Thrilled to be here.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks, Josh. I mean, this is really great. As far as our guest speakers, I think this is the first time that we get to talk to somebody who's really been as involved with DEF. There's not many people that have been longer than you. So thanks for coming. We really appreciate your time. But to kick it off, let's talk about your beginnings with DEF. When did this really start? What was it before? What did it turn into? And then tell us about the beginning. What is the beginning of Josh and DEF?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's pretty humbling to be on this this podcast with you guys after hearing all of the things that people in DEF are doing right now, because it is staggering. And it's so much more than it was in the beginning. It's so much richer. And it's so much more national and more global. So it's really amazing to watch how it's thrived. And I know both of you are part of that. You especially, Mike. So thank you. You know, I think my involvement with DEF starts pretty boring, pretty dull. I think in some ways the more interesting answer is like how DEF started before me, and that was really with Ben Coleman. You know, talk about inimitable. I mean, Ben is a remarkable, brilliant, charismatic guy who had a real vision for connecting people. I was just on his podcast a month ago, and it was just great to catch up with him. But the real story with Ben was I got to know him through something that many, many deaf members know well from the annals of naval innovation, the Crick. The Crick stirs and the Crick. Ben helped start the Crick. Crick was CNO Rapid Innovation Cell, one of those sadly one of those inventions that ended up in sort of the graveyard of DoD innovation history, but was so promising and gave an amazing start to so many incredible disruptive thinkers. Anyway, so I got to know Ben when he was bringing the I think it was the first class of the Crick to the Pentagon. And I had started up a job there running a small group in the Office of the Secretary of Defense and the Policy Division called the Leadership and Organizational Development Office. And the LOD team was sort of doing innovation before innovation was cool. You know, we were very early proto stage, playing with the sticky notes and so forth. And so one of the things we'd done at that time was we wanted to have our own innovation lab. And so we literally had a closet of the Pentagon that got accorded to us. We were able to sort of squat in there. And I'll give credit to Alyssa Slotkin, who's now, believe it or not, a member of Congress. But Alyssa was the one that really created this lab. She got six whiteboards hung in this hallway, essentially, which used to have Christmas decorations. And that became the first innovation lab in the Pentagon. This is like back in 2012 or something. So, of course, I brought Ben and all of his Cricksters to the Pentagon Innovation Lab. God knows what they thought flying in from San Diego or all the different places, maybe where they're coming from. They're going to get to see where all the magic happens, you know, the nerve center of innovation in DoD. And, you know, here we were, you know, we had to walk through someone else's office to try to get there, and none of the whiteboard markers worked. And anyway, so that's Ben and I bonded over this because we really felt like kindred spirits. You know, he was trying to push this boulder up a hill in the Navy. I was trying to push this boulder up a hill with the civilians and OSD, but there was a real sense of camaraderie, of kinship, of common purpose. And unlike today, where there are organizations like DEF that make everyone feel welcome and like they're somewhere that all the misfits really do go to belong, this was at a time when it was really actually scary. You know, we listened to all the wise words from Adam Grant about psychological safety. There was no psychological safety at that time. You know, people were really feeling like their careers were at risk in a way even more acute than they do today. And so, you know, that bond between me and Ben was tight and it was instant. And so Ben went back, he wrote an article that went like a shot around the world. It was a fulminating insight. He wrote an article called Why the Military Needs Disruptive Thinkers at Small Wars Journal. It's still relevant today, every word, still relevant today. And that got such a following that he created a group around that article called Disruptive Thinkers. And I think that is actually a really important lesson, willing to take a pause there to say that often it takes writing your ideas down, a la Gutenberg, right? And putting it out there, and it creates a beacon, and other people come. And so on your base, in your squadron, in your community, in your town, sometimes you got to put your sign out there and then see who comes to you, and then they rally around that. And that's exactly what Ben Coleman did. He wrote Disruptive Thinkers, and then people from all the services and all over came together, and they joined Disruptive Thinkers out in San Diego. And the Disruptive Thinkers prototype originally was, honestly, I would say probably a lot of fighter jocks and, you know, those, you know, fighter pilot type guys mixing and mingling with some entrepreneurs and investors on the West Coast. And so we think of it really as being sort of Silicon Valley, but I think it was more San Diego to get started. But it sort of spread up and down the West Coast, and you had this phenomenon of the mixing between the sort of elite military folks and the elite business folks, and them wanting to connect and talk. And so from there, it took a bit of a rebrand and became the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. And that's because at that time, it was a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of defense people. And it was very casual and very informal. And I had not really been involved at that time. But Ben and I had kept in touch. And so I missed their first big event, which was in Chicago. And I think it was like 100 people. It was very small group, very tight knit. And I think it really reflected in some ways Ben's personality, in that it was very sort of lo-fi, low-tech. Everyone paid their own way to be there. That was very important to him, that everyone sort of had skin in the game. They chose to be there. It was very irreverent, and it was really focused on the sort of personal connections. And, you know, oscillating back and forth between reading Greek philosophy and talking about really, you know, choices about life as much as about policy or as much as about innovation. I mean, it was really, I think, a place for those folks to connect with each other. And I ended up joining a year later and was at the second DEF event. That was my first DEF event. And then for me, it was, you know, love at first sight. I mean, I was a few years into running my own group, Young Professionals in Foreign Policy, which is a lot like DEF really, but less oriented around national security. And so I felt a kind of kindred spirits there all around and really was enjoying meeting all these great people at DEF, but it was still had this like intense grassroots feel to it. But it was more and more people in uniform, more and more officers, I would say over time, maybe fewer of the entrepreneurs. And I think it really started to evolve into the emotional support group for those like-minded people who are just trying to have an impact. Honestly, the way I think about it, trying to save the Department of Defense from itself. And because that's dangerous work, they wanted a place to go to find other people that also had that aspiration in their heart and were also willing to put their career on the line to do that. And so, you know, I was always a DEF member and just really humbled to be there and learning from everyone until Ben made the decision that he wanted to transition out of a leadership role. And he said, you know, would I help him do that? And so I had promised myself I wouldn't join any more boards, but I really, really appreciated Ben's role as the founder and the face, and in some ways more than the face, really the heart of the organization. And I knew that it was really, really hard to keep communities like that going when it was so personal for all the participants. I mean, it's still only a couple hundred people at this point, right? It's still so personal. And when we talk about a community being personal and being intimate and having those bonds, that's really a good thing. When we talk about leadership being sort of cult of personality and leaders being very, you know, personality-driven decision-making, you know, that makes it sound like a bad thing. But those are two sides of the same coin that all organizations face. And so you want it to be an organization with a really personal connection to the mission and to the other people there, and that's what makes it a community. But you also have a lot of growing pains when you want to try to transition that into being a sustainable institution that is more, that is larger and more powerful than what any one individual can do. So I knew that despite Ben's best attempts to make leadership sustainable, that that was a moment of peril for DEF, as it is for all organizations, where to some degree, they all have some amount of what I call founder syndrome. And they're all trying to figure out how to survive that. So I said to Ben, I would do 1 year and 1 year only on the board if he was stepping down, just to ensure the continuity, because I had just gone through this journey myself with my organization, Young Professionals Foreign Policy. And I felt like it would be wrong to withhold those lessons from the deaf community and from Ben. So Ben and I shook hands, made a deal, and said we would do 1 year. I would do the transition and get out. Of course, that was like, what, 5 years ago? So the rest of the story is just a series of twists and turns from leader to leader, working with Jim Perkins, working with Morgan Plummer, and now working with you, Mike, to sort of trace the trajectory of the organization going through the fundamental tension I set up at the beginning, which is you want DEF to become a more and more and more effective, efficient, high-impact organization that it's able to meet more and more of the needs of more and more people, to be able to be a home for a diverse community of people. So there's, you know, all those different Slack channels are there to attract something different in different people, make it special for different people in different ways so they feel they belong. But it has to have a strategy where it all hangs together so that it's not just a place where anyone can do whatever they want, but where the sum adds up to more than the parts. Or there's a real thoughtful theory of change behind the mission where the, you know, the choices that we make are strategic and structural and sound. It's institutionally sustainable. There's a fundraising and business plan behind it, a business model behind it. And you have to have all those things fit together, but you still have to maintain that human scale of intimacy where it still feels like a place where people have an emotional attachment to the people that they meet there and an emotional attachment to the purpose of the organization. And so managing that tension is really what the leaders of the organization are responsible for doing, right? Because you don't want it to feel anonymous and corporate, but you also can't have it just be a pickup game where we're, you know, constantly reinventing the wheel and not really delivering for people in a way that they feel is reliable. So the DEF journey has been that balancing act, and you know, the baton is passed. You guys are just crushing it, hard to do over many years, but pretty amazing to see how the DEF star has risen. And a lot of credit to Morgan, who's now the chairman of the board, because he really saw all the parts and pieces that had been built over the years. And he saw, I think, better than anyone else, how to reassemble them into something that was going to withstand the test of time, and then left the organization in so much better shape than he found it. And then a true test of leadership that Ben passed, Jim passed, Morgan passed, is, you know, having a ready successor there to step in, take the reins, leave their own mark on it. And that's really what Ben achieved. And that's really what makes DEF special. I didn't have much of a role in any of that except to be there to try to just help it along at the junctures.
Well, you know, there's still something to be said for that, to be involved in a community for so long. You know, how do you think this group has changed since DEF started? There's a lot of similarities, yes, to when it started, but whether it be, you know, architecture of the group, the leadership, how would you compare DEF today to DEF yesterday? And what changes do you think need to happen for DEF of tomorrow based on that feedback loop?
Yeah. Well, I'll try. I mean, I feel like I gave a sort of a very thorough answer of that, so I'll try to keep it brief. I think the most important thing that has stayed the same with DEF is, and this is to paraphrase Cormac McCarthy, DEF members still carry the fire. You know, there's the road, the thing that holds the virtuous people who are on this journey of survival together is the sense that is passed down from father to son to carry the fire. And the thing that to me is the unbroken thread that goes back to the first conversations of disruptive thinkers in the broom closets in the Pentagon that has, you know, been extended through time from leader to leader, from community discussion to discussion, from agora to agora, from event to event, is that today, when people join DEF for the first time, you think of the dozen people whose names you just listed, Mike, of the new DEF members, when they join our community, maybe not at a bar, maybe they join it over Slack, but when they join, I think they also carry the fire. and they know that this is not just a club for talking about tech. It's not just a membership organization, right? This is a place where people come because they are inspired and they want to have an impact on the people around them, not just an impact on their own careers. They want to give more than they get, and they show up and they want to be there. And it's not just a networking thing. I mean, they are there because they have a hunger for a better future, a hunger for ideas. And what can I say? I think Cormac McCarthy said it best.
So what more about this role of the board member? You know, you were a participant, you know, you sat on the board, you know, 5 years later, here you are again. What influence do you have on DEF operations? What DEF looks like today? What can a board member, and what does a board member do for the DEF organization at large?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've served on about a dozen boards over the years. It's almost like somewhere between a hobby and a job for me. And then, you know, I ran a board for 4 years as my full-time job with the Defense Innovation Board. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about boards, you know, how do they work well? How do they not work well? You know, what's the sort of, think of almost a taxonomy of boards. I think about boards of directors, boards of advisors, boards of trustees, as sort of a useful framework to think about that, right? The board of directors model is really the fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the policy and programmatic choices that the staff or volunteers make are consistent with the mission and values of the organization. So there's that sort of the piece of fiduciary obligation sort of say, like, are we still headed directionally in the right path? They also have to maintain the financial health of the organization. And so part of the fiduciary obligation is this organization remaining financially sustainable? And is it getting more financially sustainable over time? Are we investing properly? And are we compliant? Legal, tax, insurance, the boring stuff. And so, you know, in some ways, every organization needs a kind of board of directors function. There's also the board of advisors role, which is really about wisdom, insight, and coaching. And it's not a governance function at all. It's really being available to advise the organization to give it what it needs. And that usually falls into at least two flavors. One is coaching the institution, and the second is coaching the key players. And so, you know, coaching the key players means being a sounding board for, you know, the key decision makers in the organization that, you know, obviously think of the executive director or others, but, you know, it could be in other ways too. Maybe it's a programming question or it's, you know, opening a door, inviting a right speaker, helping out in those ways. But it's really about, you know, being there to help set the strategic direction and the vision. And then the third type in my mind is the trustee. And in my mind, the trustee is, these people are just distinguished names. They bring status and prestige and credibility to the group. And that opens doors to the financial resources they need to be successful, to the boldface names you need to kind of attract people and to have that kind of thrilling an intellectual experience of hearing from someone that's had extraordinary experiences in their life and can speak from the first person about change. And those people are usually busy and hard to get to, and you know, you need access, and they provide those door opening access. And so when I think about boards, I think about those three hats. And over time, organizations evolve in terms of what they need, in terms of the blend of those things. And so you start out pure grassroots organization. There's literally not two nickels to rub together. Everyone's just a pickup game. No one has a job description. Everyone's just like, we're a group, you know, we meet, we do stuff together, right? And then you follow that evolution through this sort of stages of nonprofit growth until you get more structure. You have bylaws, articles of incorporation, maybe a strategy document, maybe a prospectus for donors. You start to have job descriptions and, like, you know, differentiated roles, and the number of volunteers grows so that eventually you need to have one volunteer managing another because you're not totally flat anymore. You need to start bringing leadership structure. As soon as there's leadership structures, then there are debates about which are their optimized leadership structures. So, you know, people are trying out different things, and, you know, it just grows, you know, from, you know, 5 or 10 people with a lot of social ties to now it's distributed, and now you're running a bureaucracy, like, for better or worse, right? It's a distributed group of people organized for a common purpose. They have multiple jobs, different functions, people organized into teams, you know, and so it's sort of, at some point, that becomes so complex that someone says, this should be somebody's full-time job, right? This is a lot for volunteers. I have kids. I have a day job. Maybe I have other stuff that I'm doing. And so you kind of hit these milestones, and this is pretty much where DEF is at right now, where someone starts to say, we've built something so complex and yet still so important and high impact that I need to get some people on this half-time or some people on this full-time. And then that is a sort of a Rubicon, because now you have to, you're not raising money because you want to. You're raising money because you have to. You're not raising money to have better beer and chicken wings at the annual event or a nicer venue or a fancier website. Now you're raising money because someone that you care about enough to hire, now their livelihood and their family is in your hands, because as a board, you're now responsible for their well-being, not just the organization's well-being. Organizations come and go, but you really don't want to hire someone who's worthy of being hired and then fire them because you didn't raise enough money to support them. So if you take your role seriously, that is more than just an organizational obligation. That is a moral obligation at that point. And so that's another turning point. And so then, you know, you got to bring your fundraising A game, and you got to start budgeting and planning, and it just brings more professionalism. And, you know, that's the trajectory. And, like, eventually, you know, you follow that path long enough, you know, you be after 150 years, you become the American Red Cross. You're a $1 billion-a-year organization with thousands of volunteers around the world. But they're kind of all on that path. And it's not to say that you have to go all the way down the path. You know, a lot of organizations find the right turnoff point, you know, and that's why Team Rubicon wants to be Team Rubicon and doesn't want to be the Red Cross. And that's great. Like, that's fine. That's where DEF is. So DEF is figuring out where it wants to exit that trajectory in order to become what it wants to be for a while. It doesn't have to be forever, but for a while. And so the board's job is to follow that journey and make those choices. And so I think, you know, I've been with DEF about a decade, I guess, you know, that's really been the thread of the conversation, you know, talking to Jim Perkins, or before that, you know, Micah Murphy when he was a treasurer, or, you know, just different people at different times. You know, when we used to, at one point we were very integrated with the Atlantic Council, because DEF had won a grant from called the Take Point Initiative. And so we were very integrated into Atlantic Council. We were having all of our meetings there. We had a lot of Atlantic Council folks like Dan, you know, Dan Chu and Steve Grundman and others were part of the conversation, and they came and they left, you know, and DEF kept going, like, going in a different way. But this is what a board is supposed to be figuring out. You know, I will say this, you know, we just brought Ian Eishen onto our board. What an impressive guy, you know, amazing. So valuable to have an enlisted perspective, but more than that, like, Ian is just a visionary leader with incredible insight, into organizational culture. And, you know, you know, it's a real sign of health that the board brought him on, because that shows self-awareness. We did a gap analysis. We looked at where were we diverse and where we were not. We considered many candidates. We have, like, a procedure now for nomination and confirmation, you know, and so, like, bringing him on board along with, you know, other, you know, incredibly impressive people like Megan Metzger, an amazing entrepreneur, you know, that kind of work shows how the board is evolving and maturing. You know, we probably have some big next steps on our horizon. some big choices to make. I kind of foreshadowed what I think is on everyone's mind about what that future of death looks like.
You know, when it comes to the history of death, the participation of deaf members, what can your average non-deaf member do for the community, for deaf as an organization? How can they help the board or the group at large? If somebody really values this organization, what more do you think they can do?
I mean, I think a little bit depends on sort of what's the profile of that person, you know. But, you know, for the person I imagine listening to this conversation, is probably a member, maybe they're thinking about becoming a member. I would say, you know, the most important thing is to engage. Just participate. You know, if you're like, look at us right now, you know, we're doing this podcast and we're wondering who's going to listen to this. You know, it's a lot more rewarding to record a podcast if you think people will listen. So being a listener is part of making the podcast a success. You know, there's a lot of people who want to do programming, but they want people to enjoy the conversation and get something out of it. So you might be thinking to yourself, I don't have time to organize an event. But the truth is showing up at the event is contributing. There's no leaders who don't have followers. So obviously we want everyone in deaf to be a leader, but it's really, really important to be a follower in the community, to be a participant. You know, showing up makes it motivating for everyone else. You think about Jeremy McCoy, right? This guy's all over social media. He is so motivated. He is constantly promoting, you know, the deaf image, brand, content, people. If no one liked his posts, would he do it for years? You know, like, I'm not saying that the person that likes the post or retweets the tweet is as important as the person who writes it. But let's all remember that, like, you don't get to be a community if there aren't people who read what you write, listen to what you say, show up when you convene, care about it. You know, when we put out a call for donations, you know, giving $5 makes a really big difference. You know, I can tell you experience when we did the first crowdsourcing fundraiser with Jim Perkins. And, you know, Jim had to put out a fundraiser and we didn't know whether anyone would pay any money. And we got $10,000. Which I thought was a huge success. Poor Jim did not think it was a success because he had set the goal, I think, of $20,000 or something like that. But the point is, like, if you put yourself in the shoes of the volunteer president, like Jim, who's like leaving it all in the field, like doing everything he can, right? Like giving $5 to Jim is like a huge boost motivation for him. Like someone out there values what we're doing. And so sure, like, would we have rather gotten $1,000? Yes. But in an all-volunteer organization, a lot of $5 donations really means a lot to people because it's sending the message, we care about what you're volunteering your time to do. And that makes people want to do more of it. So just being there, showing up is a huge contribution. Now, of course, I want everyone to launch a Gutenberg, a Cornerstone, a Firestarter. I mean, I want people to do 10x more, but don't underestimate the power of showing up. And the reason I belabor that is because I know there are a lot of people out there who are getting the emails, they're in the Slack channel, maybe they're listening to the first few minutes of this podcast and are probably didn't listen long enough through my prattling on to get to this message. But if they did, right, they're wondering, like, couldn't I just do my laundry right now? Or like, shouldn't I just like watch Netflix right now? Or like, do I really have the space in my brain for a cerebral discussion about tech transformation or something? And they're sort of on the fence about whether to do the next deaf thing or not. And I just want to exhort them to do it because it really matters to the other people to show up to see whether the event is full or not. And so it's one of these self-fulfilling prophecies. Like if you show up, more people show up, it gets better. The better it gets, the more you want to be there. You know, so that's like, that's the church philosophy of deaf. That's the church of deaf. You know, we all come together into the place of worship. And the more we come together as a community, this is very much a metaphor, folks, totally not religious. You know, the more we all come together to be part of the community, the richer and stronger the community gets, and then we all benefit.
Well, you know, I think we really all benefited from having you on today. I think there's so much more to this conversation to be had. So, you know, let's carry this on again. Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for what you do for the deaf community and all of us inside of this organization. Well,
thank you for what you do. And for being part of the history of this community and more importantly, part of its future. So carry the fire.
it'll be great to see where this leads. Thanks again. And Mike, why don't you take us home?
All right. Thank you, Josh. That was probably one of my favorite interviews. There's such a broad arc that we covered in just like 30 minutes here together. Two specific sub-themes towards the end. First, if everybody stopped liking Jer McCoy's posts on social media, I think they would keep coming because there's some debate over whether or not he's a bot with all of the time and dedication. That's an ongoing joke, but Jer actually post-produces this podcast, so he'll hear this and chuckle later tonight. So thank you, Jer. And also to your sub-theme about donating and, you know, any little bit of helping. We talked about Deaf 2020 tickets earlier today, and we put those out on a sliding scale. So you can contribute a little bit or more than a little bit when you get your ticket. And that's just one way that, you know, we appreciate support from the members, from people who find this valuable in their lives. And it keeps the lights on and keeps us going. To your themes about the board, you know, I, as the executive director, really appreciate the strategic mentoring and the guidance and that fiduciary responsibility you talked about and those governance functions. I think they're really vital to the health of DEF as an organization that scales to support a community that's growing like crazy. So I thank you for that and all the board members, because you bring a lot of passion to it and you bring a focus on the community and on the mission. And that really empowers us as volunteers to keep executing. So this was wonderful. I look forward to sharing it at length and even to re-listening to it. For those who tuned in, if you have ideas for this podcast, for things that we can add or change, we're always open to feedback. And we're certainly sure that there are plenty more things happening all over the community than what we talked about today. But we hope this at least encouraged you to get more involved and join the discussions. And I'm sure there'll be some takeaways from the themes we discussed with Josh. So until next week, we've been your hosts, Mike Madrid and Mike Pakoda. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. We love ideas and feedback, so feel free to send your thoughts to hello@deaf.org. For more great content and to stay in the loop about community events and activities, follow us on social media and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. Everyone plays a part in building the innovative national security culture we want to see. To find where you fit, just go to deaf.org/join. That's DEF.org/join.